We've talked about women deacons. Now we're going to talk about women presbyters. First of all, we haven't done the groundwork. What is a presbyter and what did a presbyter do? I mentioned that even as early as Ignatius of Antioch in the early second century, there are presbyters. Well, of course, there are people with that title even earlier. In Acts, it says that the apostles appointed presbyters. There are other cases where presbyters are mentioned in 1 Timothy as well. But in this organization in which there is a bishop, presbyters, deacons, deaconesses, that's a particular church order that came to be probably early second century, late first, maybe early second century. And so what is a presbyter and what did a presbyter do? Well, first of all, the word presbyteros simply means elder, older person. And it is a word that can be applied to an older person. To myself, for example. but there's also a technical meaning of it in the church when you're talking about bishop, presbyters, and deacons. When you just have presbyters in an earlier form, it probably is equivalent to the patrons of house churches. They're the people who exercise the sort of predominant leadership. But when you get into bishop, presbyters, and deacons, they're not. The bishop is the one who's calling the shots, basically. The bishop is the head honcho, you know. So what does a presbyter do? And I mentioned in the last segment that Ignatius says, okay, the bishop is like God and the deacon is like Christ and the presbyter is they're the council of the apostles. It doesn't sound as impressive as being like God or Christ. Huh? So we're really not sure what presbyters did in this organization. There's a direct line from bishop to deacon, not from bishop to presbyter, as I said. The deacons are the ones who are the right hand, deacons and deaconesses, the right hand of the bishop. What we think is by about the 4th century, what's happening is that the church, the Christianity, is extending from the cities to the countryside all over. Christianity began, of course, the Jesus movement began as a rural movement in Galilee, but it moves to Jerusalem, and all the information we have is that the organization and the spread of it, the missionary movement, spread from city to city, from Jerusalem out, and all of Paul's operation is in city to city. Possible exception of his letter to the Galatians. Galatia was a region, but it had a number of cities in it. So I don't even there think that Paul is out among the haystacks, evangelizing in little villages. He's going to cities. And we don't even know, one of the real mysteries is what happened in Galilee. What happened to all the followers of Jesus in Galilee? We simply don't know. They left no written records. So we're talking about cities. And by the 4th century, though, they're spreading out into the villages, into the smaller areas in the countryside. And one supposition is that the presbyters then were the people who went out and they became the leaders in the local churches in the countryside, accountable to the bishop of the larger city, the urban center. That's a good guess, I think, of what happened. Now, as I said, there's ambiguity in the word presbyter because it can mean elder, it can mean leader. It depends on the context. And when you have a woman who has the title presbyter, which we do in inscriptions, you got to be careful. It can mean presbytera, can mean the wife of the presbyter, of the male presbyter, as in some of the Eastern churches today. The wife of the presbyter, of the priest, is called a presbytera. And in that case, it does not necessarily imply any kind of a designation to ministry. So it depends on the context. You have to be very careful in reading these inscriptions and this information. You have to depend on context. And there are some inscriptions in which it's pretty clear that a presbytera is the wife of a presbyter, and he's the one who has some kind of a role. Does she have any role? Well, in the Eastern churches today, often the wife of the priest, of the presbyter. Priest, by the way, is a word with a different origin, sacerdos in Latin and hierus in Greek. It's very different, and it's at a later point that the name priest in English replaces presbyter. Presbyter simply means an elder, older person, not a offerer of sacrifice. Priest means the one who offers sacrifice. So sometimes the wife of the presbyter is a person who has a ministry of mercy, of charity, you know, and really does extend the ministry of her husband in that realm. But then he's the one with the sacramental ministry. Okay, so sometimes that's what it's pretty clear the inscription means. But there are times when that's really pretty clearly not the case. And so we're going to look at three examples of that. And the first one is Flavia Vitalia. There's a date on this inscription, 425. It's when Emperor Theodosius is council for the 11th time. It's the year 425 CE. And this inscription it's not a funerary inscription. It is an inscription found in a cemetery, but not for somebody's burial, not for her burial. And it's from Dalmatia, from what is today Croatia. And it's a Latin inscription, and it says, under our Lord Theodosius, council for the 11th time, and Valentinian, nobleman of Caesar. So this is the dating of the inscription. This is the time when these people were in office. I, Theodosius, an unknown person by that name, bought a burial chamber, a burial tomb, from the Matrona Flavia Vitalia Presbytera Sancta for 3 golden solidi. That's the price that's paid. So he bought this burial plot from Flavia Vitalia, who is Matrona Presbytera Sancta. She's a matrona. We've looked at that before. That means that she's a married woman, properly married according to Roman law, and she is a holy presbyter. It cannot be argued that she is simply the wife of a male presbyter. He would have bought the property from the male presbyter, you know. She is a woman who represents the church. She is an agent of the church, at least for the issue of selling property. So she has some kind of authority in the church itself. That is about all you can say about it. We don't know, other than selling property for the church, we don't really know what else she did. The second example is Leta, a woman named Leta. And here, this is in, I didn't put the place, this is in Calabria, in southern Italy, Tropea, a place called Tropea. And this is a funerary inscription, and I've seen the original. It's as large as the covering of a tomb. It's very long, and it's very wide. And it was placed on the ground on top of this woman's tomb. It's now in private ownership. And it says, sacred to her good memory, Leta Presbytera lived 40 years, 8 months, and 9 days. That was typical of Roman inscriptions to count the days, the months, the years, the months, and the days. Her husband, her maritus, made this. She preceded him in peace on the day before the Ides of May, May 14th. He doesn't even name himself. He simply says, her husband did this. And that is very unusual. Usually, the dedicator will also give the name, whether it's a man or a woman, whoever paid for this tomb, who set it up, usually gives the name. He doesn't give his name. If he's the presbyter and she's simply the wife of the presbyter, he's going to give his name. So, again, we have a testimony. It's 4th or 5th century. We have a testimony to a woman who bore the title presbytera. And some have suggested that this relates to a letter of the Bishop of Rome to the bishops of this area of Calabria around the same time. And the Bishop of Rome says, it has come to our attention that that there is this irregularity going on, that that you have women who are doing the service of the altar. So stop it. So you have a bishop in Rome who hears about something that is going on in which women are performing sacramental ministry, the service at the altar. He disapproves of it. No surprise. But you don't have a letter from somebody saying, stop doing this, unless you're doing it. Somebody's doing it. And so what we think might be going on in South Italy, which was very much under the influence of the Greek church, because there were a lot of Greeks who had settled centuries before that in southern Italy, that we may have here an example of what we would call altar ministry performed by women. And it would have been fairly widespread, but something that in Rome they didn't want to do. This is at a time when things are still very fluid. Things are developing in different parts of the world in different ways. And so this is an interesting possible example. And the third example is also a 4th or 5th century. It's for sure after... I shouldn't say 4th, it's probably 5th century, it's after the year 430. and this is from the Basilica of Augustine in Hippo in North Africa, but it's after the time of Augustine. Augustine died in 430, and while he was dying, the Vandals were on their way. They were working their way across North Africa. They had gone through Europe and very disruptive invasion, and they were working their way. They were almost to Hippo at the time that Augustine died. And this comes from the Vandal period. The Vandals were Christians. They were Arian Christians. And so they took over the religious establishments, the churches and everything. And we wish we knew a whole lot more about Vandal Christianity. But this is a burial that was actually in the church that Augustine preached in and worked in for so many years before that. And it is a dedication, again, for a woman who has died. And her name is either Guilia, the second name is Runa, Guilia Runa, or Guilia is a misspelling of Julia, spelled with a G instead of an I or J, as it usually is in Latin. Runa is certainly a Vandal name. And it may be Guilia Runa that she's a Vandal Christian. And she's given the title Presbyterissa, which is a kind of a diminutive of Presbytera. And she's a Presbyterissa, who lived about 50 years. It's very quick. Guilia Runa Presbyterissa, who died in peace, lived 50 years. So it's a beautiful mosaic. And it was, again, over her tomb. And again, we just really don't know what she did. But it must be a title on her own, of her own, because again, no husband is mentioned. She doesn't seem to be the wife of a presbyter. He would put his own name in there. So this is a third example, and there are a few others, a handful of others, examples of inscriptions that name women presbyters when it's pretty likely that they are not just the wives of presbyters. So, what can we conclude here? First, there definitely were women who wore the title, who bore the title presbyter in their own right, and not because they were wives of presbyters. But what did they do? Well, I think what they did is about as unclear as what male presbyters did in the same time and place. We just don't know. At some point, certainly by the time that the Bishop of Rome writes his letter to Calabria, presbyters are exercising some kind of sacramental ministry. That is, they are doing leadership at the altar, and therefore leadership of bread and cup, not just the bishop, but presbyters as well, probably in places that were where there wasn't a bishop. And every major city by this time that had any kind of Christian community also had a bishop. So this would be in other places where there were not bishops. Were women exercising the same kind of function? We don't know. We simply don't know. It would be very tempting to to say, well, of course they were. We hope they were. But it could be that the same kind of bias was operating, and they were precluded from doing the same kind of ministry that the presbyters did, the male presbyters. What is clear is that they exercised agency in the church. Flavia Vitalia especially represented the church in an important way with the question of sale of land. So I kind of want to say that whatever the male presbyters were doing, probably the female presbyters were doing for the most part, and certainly in some places.